with Sammy Mikael. Is that how you pronounce your last name? You pronounce your name Mikael?
M-I-C-H-A-E-L.
Correct, correct.
The family name, and my private name is Sammy.
Sammy, right. Now, what is your wife's name?
Rachel.
How do you spell that? Rachel.
Yeah.
Oh, she's Rachel Yona
Yona.
Mikael.
Yes.
And is she also Iraqi background?
Their parents are Iraqis.
What was her maiden name?
And Yona.
Oh, her maiden name was Yona, Yonah.
Yes.
Okay. And so when and where were you born, and where do you live now?
I was born in Iraq in 1926.
In what city?
In Baghdad, and now I am living in Israel, Haifa. I fled from Iraq in 1948.
In 1948.
Yes, and I stayed in Iran about 9 months. Then I came to Israel in 1949.
Right.
Yes, after serving completing my service in the army, I started to live in Haifa, in Arab neighborhood, which is called Wadi Nisnas.
WADI.
WADI, Nisnas,
Nis,
Nisnas, you can spell it how you like.
NASS.
Yes.
Okay.
And about this experience, I wrote the novel Trumpet in the Wadi, which is just is published here in the United States by Simon and Schuster, and
correct.
My travel here to the city to promote this
this
novel.
Book, right. All right. Now, so let's go back to your birthplace and then we'll come back to Haifa.
Yes.
So would you describe your birthplace? Were you born in your home, in a hospital?
No one was born in the hospital at that time. Maybe in the 15th or 17th of the last century, women began to give, some women began giving birth to in hospitals, but usually they were midwives, and the giving birth was at home.
At home, okay. And how many brothers and sisters did you have?
We are five brothers, and we were three sisters. One of them died before 20 years by heart attack in Israel.
All right. And did you live with your grandparents and your parents?
Please?
Did you live with your parents and your grandparents?
I lived, yes. To the age of the 9 years, we lived together, parents and the grandparents. And at the age of 10, 8, we left the old traditional neighborhood of the Jews in Iraq.
Which one?
The neighborhood of the Jews. Ancient, very old, and we built a house in a mixed population. It's called Batawin.
Oh, Batawin, Batawen.
Yes, which is at that time was very modern neighborhood. And for the first time, we have a home of our own. Three stories, and around us there were huge fields of palm trees and agriculture you couldn't see even one tree.
Mm-hmm. You mean in the old city?
Yeah.
Right. And what was your routine like? You would get up and go to school?
Ah, really? Yes. It was about 3 kilometers from this Bataouin, from the central Jewish neighborhood.
Right.
I go back in the morning. I had the breakfast at home. And then I had the fees to go back to bus to the school.
Yes.
But I prefer to keep the money and go buy food.
Uh-huh, uh-huh.
So it was very beautiful, colorful. I went through the soup and through the main street.
Uh-huh.
For me, it was quite an experience.
In other words, you went through the main street of Baghdad, Rashid Street?
Rashid Street, yeah.
I see. So that's how you would get to school.
Out of the way was in Rashid Street.
In the what?
Part of the way to the school was Rashid
Street. Okay, great. And so you would go with your brothers and sisters, you'd walk together?
Oh, no, because then... between me and the other brothers, there were 3 sisters who studied, went to school, which was a Christian school,
mm-hmm.
Administered by nuns.
Right.
So that there was quite a gap between me and my brothers.
I see.
Very, very small children.
Right. Yes. So you were the oldest?
Yes.
Okay. Now, what kind of a school did you go to?
It was a Jewish school.
Uh-huh.
Administered by the Jewish community.
Mm-hmm. Yes. What was the name of the school?
Shem Tov. Shem Tov.
Shem Tov. Shemtob.
Yes.
Shem Tov School.
How do you call it? To the 6th grade, I studied there.
Yes.
After that, I went to the secondary and high school, which is called Shamash School.
Oh, the Shamash, Shamash School.
Yes.
Okay.
Part of the subjects in Shamash School, we studied in English.
Yes.
Physics, chemistry, arithmetic, algebra, and so on.
Uh-huh.
While the other subjects we studied in Arabic language.
Uh-huh. That's great. So you had Arabic and English, and what about then Hebrew you learned also?
No, we studied Hebrew till the 6th grade.
Uh-huh.
No more than that.
Right.
And only part of the Bible. Reading chapter here, chapter there, without understanding every word.
Right.
And that is all.
Right.
The Jewish studies stopped at the 6th grade.
Okay. Now, how were the boys treated differently from the girls?
Oh, they were the masters of the
right.
universe. And the girls were the second class creature.
Uh-huh.
Because there were many reasons for that. First of all, the tradition, the Jewish tradition, Muslim tradition, even the Christian tradition at that time, like all over the East,
mm-hmm.
that the girls after the women, they sat at home,
mm-hmm.
Take care for the family.
Right.
But the boys, when they go out, they go to work and help their family, the parents, to in their old ages.
Uh-huh.
But the center of the family was the father.
Right.
And so the son is the future, the center
of the family.
And so it's like that.
Mm-hmm. Now, did you have, with all those children, did you have help at home, and who cooked and all that? Did you have served?
My mother cooked at home.
Uh-huh.
We have a servant who lived with our home. We went to her family only twice in the year.
Mm-hmm. And where were they from?
In Sukkot, in Pesach.
Uh-huh.
Then returned back. And her family was in the neighborhood, the traditional center of Jewish community.
In Baghdad?
In Baghdad, yes.
I see. Okay. You know, because some of them came from Kurdistan.
Yes, I know. Mm-hmm. They came usually where, at the age of 15 and up. But my mother took a servant at the age of 12.
I see.
And she stayed at home till the...
So she was Jewish, the servant?
When she married. Yes, all of them. Even the Kurds are Jews.
Right, no, I knew that. The Jewish Kurds.
We don't take Anjou going servant at home.
Right. Now, did you observe all the Jewish holidays at home, and what did you do on Shabbat and all?
Every Shabbat and every holiday, but not in a strict way.
Right.
For instance, we traveled on Shabbat. We spent money on Shabbat. We went to the cinema on Shabbat.
Right.
And since we were a very high percentage in Baghdad itself, we were about 20% of the population of Baghdad.
Right.
And we were the rich part of the population.
Mm-hmm.
Really, all Baghdad has its holiday on Shabbat.
Mm-hmm.
The financial and business centers were closed on Shabbat, not on Friday or Sunday.
So, in other words, were things closed on Friday for the Muslim holiday?
I don't know, because Muslims worked at their holiday.
Oh, they worked at their holiday.
Yes.
And what about Sunday? Was that a work day also?
The Christian was a very, very small minority.
I see.
It hasn't any stamps on the everyday life of Baghdad.
I see. All right. And so, was the Jewish community integrated into the society?
Quite well, but was also a very well-organized community.
Uh-huh.
For instance, for the school, uh-huh. Education,
uh-huh.
was managed by the community.
Mm-hmm.
We have a Jewish hospital.
Mm-hmm.
We have also organized a building of synagogue.
Uh-huh.
And so on and so on. And also the ceremonial and buried graveyard.
Cemetery.
Cemetery. All of it organized by the Jewish community. They have contributions from the rich members of the community, and we have taxes, and they got the taxes by the shuhet,
the butcher.
The butcher. They have to give for their sheep, which was butchered. Some money.
Right.
It is a tax, indirect tax.
Right. Now, did the rabbi, for example, did he have a job besides being the rabbi?
No. He has only a rabbi. He hasn't any job. He, 90%, 99% of them were teachers.
I see.
But they didn't. Well, only rabbis, really, they teach in the yeshiva, and so on.
So that's how they made a living?
Yeah.
Uh-huh. Okay. And could you go to any synagogue, or you had to be a member?
Only my grandfather went to the synagogue at Shabbat.
Uh-huh.
My father went only maybe twice or once a year.
I see.
But, as a child, I went from our Batawin neighborhood to sleep at my grandfather's and went with him to the synagogue.
Uh-huh.
And it was for me joyful experience more than religious experience. Because I like to see my uncles and my cousins at the same time. Right.
And what were your relationships and interactions like with the Christians and the Muslims?
Since we in Batawin at that time, when we started to live there, it was a mixed neighborhood. Then from the right, we have a Christian family. The neighbors from the left were a Muslim family.
Uh-huh.
We played together, mm-hmm. organized against, in groups against the groups of the neighborhood, neighborhood. Things went well, very well, I would say, till the Nazi propaganda and the trouble in Palestine became more and more strong.
Mm-hmm.
And at that time, that is from 1936, Muslims and Christians began to go out of this neighborhood,
mm-hmm.
because the prices of the houses went up and up.
Uh-huh.
And Jews came in to the point that all Batawin became a Jewish neighborhood of the middle class, the Jewish middle class.
I see. So, in other words, after 1941, relations became difficult between.
Yes. Before that, even. It started to become worse in 1936, which was the first army coup d'etat.
I see.
And the strengthening of the nationalistic Arabic movement inside Iraq, with the flavor of Nazi propaganda, broadcasted by in Berlin by in Arabic language.
Oh, from Berlin.
Yes.
From Berlin, you mean the Nazis brought it to the Middle East?
Yes.
Via Turkey?
Huh?
From Turkey?
No, in Arabic.
You mean, that, in other words, they brought tapes and all, and they broadcast it in Baghdad?
Yes, but we received it in the radio.
Mm-hmm.
And also the Arab uprising in Palestine and war. The civil war between them and the British and against the Jews in Palestine also affected the relations between Jews and Jews.
I see, okay.
We didn't say Jews and Arabs, we said Jews, Muslims, and Christians. The differentiation wasn't Jews and that, because as if we understood that all of us are Arabs at that time.
Right.
The difference was only the religion.
Right. Okay, now, when did your... So you left in 48. Did your whole family leave at the same time?
No. I escaped Iraq solely by myself because I was active in the communist, underground Communist Party, which is very, very dangerous to do at that time.
Mm-hmm.
Even I was active among the Shiites and inside the Iraqi Iraqi army. And when my identity was exposed, there was a danger of a sentence of death for me. So that I escaped Iraq only by myself, with the help of a person which had some of money. Both the border between Iraq and Iran, until I reached the Tehran. And this, when I came to the 1949, before the mass immigration of Jewish Iraqis, Jewish Iraqis from Iraq to Israel.
Right.
They came only after 3 years.
Right.
Only at the end of the 19.
So what? Now, what happened when you got to Israel? What was that like?
So I didn't know the language.
Mm-hmm.
I worked there in manual work everywhere.
Pardon me?
Manual work.
Right. Manual work.
Yeah. I didn't know the language. I looked upon as if I came from the desert. They were astonished that when I started to talk with them in English, they thought that I was a servant for an English master in Baghdad. And then from there I learned my English. Didn't believe me, but I said that I finished high school, also 1 year in university. That I have a bicycle, and a villa of my own. I was regarded as something came from the Arab side, the Arab tradition, the Arab language. Beside that, I was a Zionist at the time.
You were not a Zionist?
Huh?
You were or you were not a Zionist?
Yes, I wasn't.
You weren't yet.
I was communist.
Right, now how was that that you became a communist in Iraq?
In 1940-41, when the whole empire crumbled like a crowd buildings under the Wehrmacht machine.
Right.
And Germany marched from one victory to another victory.
Right.
With the slogan of killing Jews, exterminating Jews. No, for the standard, I'll stop the vicious anti-Semitic propaganda which invaded Iraq. The British didn't say any word against anti-Semitism for the Americans in the field of propaganda. And, we felt that we are in circles, that death is coming to us. From two sides, from Russia and from the desert near Aramea, Alexandria. When the German army defeated in the outskirts of Moscow,
yes,
it was the first defeat. So that we saw in Russia the salvation promise.
I see.
That we can live only by the help of the Red Army, communism. So we started to read the communist literature in English language, because there were at that time no communist literature in Arabic language.
Right.
So that we studied, we became communists through reading, more than, because the Communist Party at that time was very, very small, very sectarian thing. And we, the Jews, inside Baghdad and throughout Iraq, became the backbone of the underground. Underground.
Uh-huh.
And afterwards, the Shiites came to the party because they were a very wide influence in the Iraqi society.
Uh-huh.
This is because of that I was a communist.
Mm-hmm.
At that time, to be a Zionist, it took for us something luxurious, because Palestine was the danger to be invaded by the German army who entered Egypt.
Right.
So that Zionism was the solution at that time.
Right. Okay. And so, anyway, so in Israel, so you started working in manual labor.
Yes.
And then what happened? How did you get to be a writer?
And after 8 months, I was called to serve in the army.
Yes.
And since I hadn't any family, they put me in a squadron. Soldiers who hadn't any family.
Right.
Most of them were survivors of the Holocaust.
Right.
Nearly all of them.
Mm-hmm.
And the camp was our home.
Uh-huh.
And so they gave us in the army mm-hmm. double amount of food.
Right.
At that time, which is, a person ate meat only one a week.
Mm-hmm.
We ate it twice a day.
Mm-hmm.
So the camp became our home for 2 years.
And where was the camp?
The camp is Tel HaShomer. I don't know if you know where it is. Now it is becomes a huge hospital, Tel HaShomer.
Uh-huh. HaShomer, HaShomer.
Yes.
And it's near Tel Aviv or where?
Near Tel Aviv. It's 5 kilometers from Tel Aviv.
Uh-huh. Okay. So,
after that, I was called to be a member of the leadership of the communist journal in Arabic.
Uh-huh.
And for 5 years, I was a journalist in the leadership of the newspaper.
The communist newspaper?
Yes.
Uh-huh.
And I left the Communist Party in 1955.
Right.
When I found that that the Soviet Union, I understood that there is something wrong about communism.
Uh-huh.
And so I left the party.
Mm-hmm.
And started to work as a hydrological field engineer and I worked in the Ministry of Agriculture for 25 years.
The Ministry of what?
Agriculture.
So you were hydrologist, in other words, dealing with water.
Yes, yes. Measuring water, springs, flood water, underground water.
Oh, very interesting.
Yes, I like it very much because I have a jeep and a driver and we have an arrangement for work for a week and we were looking for our own in the nature, in the open air.
Oh, that's great.
Yes, it is fine. Uh-huh. So that I was there for 25 years and while working, I also began studying at the evening in the Haifa University and mm-hmm. I finished my BA in Arabic literature and psychology.
Uh-huh.
And after that, I shifted from writing from Arabic to Hebrew.
Mm-hmm.
And in 1974, my first novel, was the name of it, All Men Are Equal.
All Men Are Equal.
All men are equal.
Yes.
But some are more.
Uh-huh. But some are more.
Yes. Yeah. About the tension between Sephardis and Ashkenazis.
Uh-huh.
And it was And every novel which I wrote afterwards became a bestseller in Israel.
Uh-huh. A bestseller, wow.
Every novel.
Uh-huh.
So that I stopped to work in the hydrological department.
Yes.
In 1982.
Uh-huh.
And from that time till now, I am only writing.
I see. Okay. And so how do you find now the relations between the Iraqi Jews and other Jews in Israel?
They are regarded as Sephardi Jews, as second-rate Jews.
Uh-huh.
You know, Israel was founded someone for one people and another people populated.
Uh-huh.
Israel is an ideological state.
Uh-huh.
This ideology was developed in Eastern Europe,
right.
While the Jews in the Arab countries were not Zionists at all.
Right.
Because in the Middle East you are pragmatic.
Pardon me?
In the East, the culture is a pragmatic one, not ideologist one.
Right, it's a practical culture.
So lived well and bad and so on, but we managed to live through the ages.
Right.
Especially the Iraqis for more than 2,500 years in Iraq.
Right.
We really, in financial, economic, and cultural, we were the masters of the country.
Uh-huh.
But we regarded in Israel as inferior,
uh-huh.
second class.
Right. And then same until today?
You know, rationalism, it is a disease. It is so hard to...
Racism.
Yeah. There are traces, more than the traces of that.
Right. Now...
Even Barak told me that before 2 months, you know, Sami, that I have in my government, five Iraqi ministers.
Uh-huh.
I said, okay. The fact that you are mentioning it, it sounds bad.
And what do most of the Iraqis do in Israel? What are their professions and all?
The tradition. The doctor.
Mm-hmm.
I think that they were wise and lucky. They didn't go like North African directly to the politics.
Uh-huh.
They went to academy to study. They haven't to eat, but they send their children to the university, to school.
Yes.
And so that slowly, I think that the Iraqi community in Israel is successful story regarding other communities from Arab countries.
Uh-huh.
So that the income tax departments all over Israel, it is in the hands of Iraqis.
Mm-hmm.
The banks also.
Mm-hmm.
In the academic universities, there are more percentage of Iraqis than more than any other Arab Jew community.
Uh-huh.
And also in the trade and so on and so on.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Even Ma'arib, which it is in the hand of Iraqi family.
Oh, the newspaper?
Ma'arib.
Yeah, the newspaper Ma'arib.
Ma'arib. There are only three Hebrew newspapers with a wide circulation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
The Ma'arib, it is in the head of the Iraqi family, Nimrodi.
Uh-huh. They started the newspaper.
Yeah. No. They bought it.
Oh, they bought it. I see.
They bought it.
I see. Great. That's spelled M-A-A-R-I-V. M-A apostrophe.
Ma'arib. M-A-A.
Yeah.
R-I-V.
Right. Now, That's two words, Ma'ariv? It's two words, right?
No.
Oh, it's one word, M-A-A-R-I-V.
In Hebrew language, it means evening.
Evening, right.
Erev Ma'ariv.
Right, Erev Ma'ariv. Now, so tell me about your family. You have how many children?
This is my second marriage. Mm-hmm. The first marriage was with Ashkenazi, born in Israel.
Uh-huh.
The father is from Russia.
Uh-huh.
I have a daughter.
Uh-huh.
At the age of 50.
Uh-huh.
And a son at the age of 47.
Uh-huh.
With five grandchildren.
Uh-huh.
The oldest one just finished her army service.
Oh, that's great.
Yes.
And you have
children? I'm studying still in high school.
And you have children with your second wife?
I haven't.
No, I see. Okay, and let's see, what about the rest of your family? When did they leave Iraq, and how did they leave?
They came about in the end of 1951.
I see.
They have a big crisis because they came at the age from 11 to 14. It was the worst age to come to Iraq.
Mm-hmm.
To Israel. They stopped studying in Iraq when they came to Israel, and in Israel they haven't enough money to go to school, so they started to work.
I see.
I was the lucky one.
Because you got a full education.
Yes, before coming to Israel. They lived in Ma'abarot.
Oh, in tents?
In tent camp. So at the start, economically it was very, very hard for them, living in tent for 5 years.
Mm.
And afterwards, they're better.
Uh-huh.
One of my sisters she's the wife of Eric Cohen.
Oh, really?
Yes.
Who, the famous spy?
Yes.
The one that went to Syria?
Yeah.
Oh, really? Wow.
Nadia, she was my sister.
He was finally found, and was he murdered by the Syrians?
He was hanged.
After
he showed up, Janjin.
In what?
In the court. They sent him to death. They hanged
me. Right. Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. That was an amazing story. I remember reading that story. Do you have any other stories you'd like to tell me from life in Iraq? Like, what were your best memories and what were your worst memories?
No. I was a happy child, a happy youth, a happy man.
Uh-huh.
I do remember the positive things.
Uh-huh.
I was very loved by my wife, family, and the close family.
Uh-huh.
I was very successful even in the underground.
Uh-huh.
I became a figure there.
Uh-huh.
I was lucky. So that I have a positive, beautiful, happy memories more than
Now, would you like to go back there, and what would you do if you could go back there?
I don't know. Iraq, which I live, isn't the Iraq today.
Right.
It is so different. I don't think that besides the Tigris there, anything left.
Right.
Everything changed.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I am not so enthusiastic to go there. I don't know.
Uh-huh.
Really, I don't know.
Uh-huh. Now, let me ask you another question. So you lived in both, you know, the Iraqi and the Israeli culture, with Israeli being a little more westernized.
Yes.
How would you describe, if someone said, a life well lived in Iraq versus a life well lived in Israel?
No, surely for the poor Jewish in Iraq, for the lower classes, they fared well in Israel. Because Israel is a democracy.
Right.
So that economically, the Aliyah did good for the poor Iraqis who came from Iraq. Maybe because of that, there were more Zionists in Iraq among the poor, while the rich and the middle class were communists.
Right, or capitalists.
Then, but nevertheless, the feeling that we are the second rate.
Mm-hmm. Citizens
in Israel, while we were the first rate in Iraq, is something. It has something to do with the self-esteem of yours.
Right. Now, what did your father do? What was his business?
His business was the clothes business.
I see.
Importing from India and Japan, England especially, and selling to other merchants.
You mean finished clothing?
Yes.
I see.
But the family traditional profession was, we have a workshop of books for Blanjo, which is copy books for making balance in the for merchants and so on.
Oh, you
binder, something like that.
Oh, you were bookbinders also.
Yes, something like that.
I see. And then your father added the clothing business.
Yes.
And then you also sold pocketbooks.
And you succeeded.
I see. Great. So it must have been very tough on your parents to go from living very well in Iraq to living in tents in Israel.
Yes, really. My father was
crumpled. Yeah, broken hearted by it.
Yes.
And was he able to bring money out separately or not really?
No, I told.
Nothing.
He lost everything.
Oh.
Because one of the ways that the Iraqi authority placed the Jews to guard, he was taking their license of importing and exporting people, having the chance to go and work without jobs.
Right.
To eat their money.
Right.
They sell salt houses with peanuts.
Right.
Living, nearly.
And they sold it usually to Arabs, I guess?
Oh. Mostly to Muslims.
Right. All right. One last question. So what do you think will be the effect of the American involvement now in Iraq?
I think they are going. What I see, what I guess, that Saddam Hussein and his regime was the regime of minority, of Sunni Arab minority.
Yes.
Which lived from Baghdad to the north to Mosul.
Right.
The majority of the Arabs were, and still are, Shiite.
Yes.
In the north, they are Kurds.
Right.
They are very, very small representatives in the government.
Mm.
And I think that what they are going to do, something kind of federation.
Yes.
Between Shiites, Sunnis, and the Kurds.
Yes.
Because all of them that you want to go on being an Iraqi.
Right.
But the pie will be divided in other way, giving the Shiites more munitions and some kind of autonomy.
Autonomy, yeah. But ultimately, do you think they'll be like more of a pro-Western friendly country, or do you think they'll?
You know, it is the third world. The perception that what you call state in the West, it is still something new for the Eastern culture.
Mm-hmm.
It is tribal all over Africa.
Right.
Most South America,
right.
The Middle East, the idea of the state it is Western, not Eastern.
Right.
They are trying to find a way how to build an Eastern democratic state.
Right.
It is still something new for them.
Right. So you think this will make a big difference over time, or you think they'll fall back into just fighting each other?
Yeah, this is a hard question. I don't know. Mm-hmm. If there will be a democratic, it will happen not at this generation.
Uh-huh.
So, you know, the corruption, the tribal tradition, they are so widespread in the Middle East.
Right.
That they have to do very, very deep changes.
Right, right. Okay, well, thank you very much. You can put on record. Okay, go ahead.
The present...
The question is, the country is very tribal.
Yes.
And how do you see that the West can impose something which is permanent and will work?
Yes. You know, the present population is in Iraq is developed by many waves of immigration from the desert of Saudi to Iraq.
Mm-hmm.
So that they brought with them the traditions of the tribal rule, tribal tradition, tribal sense of democracy or not the autocracy, and so on. And that is one of the principal problem of any regime which wants to change Iraq from a tribal rule or reality to a modern state.
Mm-hmm.
So Iraq is divided. This one point.
Mm-hmm.
The second point is that Iraq is divided to three blocks. One is the Shiites in the south, which is the majority of the Arab population in Iraq.
Uh-huh.
In the center of Iraq, that is from Baghdad and Mosul, are a minority of Sunnis, Arab Sunnis.
Mm-hmm.
And more in the north, they are the Kurds.
Mm-hmm.
They speak Kurdish language. They are Turkish tradition, which is not Arabic one. They are Muslims, but they are not Arabs.
Mm-hmm.
And for 8 years, are fighting for their independence or some kind of autonomy.
Mm-hmm.
In Iraq.
Right.
So when the Americans came, they changed somehow gave to the Shiites south more consideration that they have at the regime of Saddam Hussein.
Mm-hmm.
And because of that, the Sunnis in the center, from Baghdad and to Mosul, they feel they lost their hegemony in Iraq.
Mm-hmm.
If you see the casualties of the American soldiers, nearly 90% of them are from Baghdad to Mosul, which is the region of the Sunnis, who feel they are losing their hegemony in Iraq.
Mm-hmm.
Now, how to change this reality and to transfer Iraq from tribal tradition or tribal sort of government to a modern state, it is very hard to say how to do it. Most of the countries in Africa, they live the same reality.
Mm-hmm.
Even the civil war in Algiers is some kind of the tribal war between the barbarians or the Berbers in the desert against the real Arabs on the near the sea.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. Really, I don't know if there is any chance to a democratic rule in the Middle East. We haven't till now.
Mm-hmm.
The states who achieve their independence,
mm-hmm.
they change to the absolute regime immediately.
Mm-hmm.
Which is one of the big problems of the Middle East.
Mm-hmm.
Democracy is something new for people who populate the area.
Right.
For them, it is a sign of weakness.
Mm-hmm.
They think that an absolute ruler, strong ruler, is the model for a good political reality.
Mm-hmm.
And democracy is the dream of about 2 or 3% of the people.
Right. In other words, it's not. Look, democracy is really not for every country, in my opinion.
Yes, yes.
So they're probably better, but they need a good ruler. That's the only issue.
Issue.
Right. Okay. Then the other question was: you made a comment that, of course, the Iraqis, the Jews in Iraq, were successful for 2,500 years, and actually a little more than that, in living with the Arabs.
No. The Arabs came to Iraq only.
Well, yeah, 750.
Nearly 1,400 years.
Right.
But when the Islam invaded Iraq.
Right, right. What was that, 750 or so A.D.?
Something about the 8th century.
Right. So my question is, the Jews of Iraq have a lot of experience dealing with, you know, the Middle East, because they're from the Middle East.
Yes.
And they were very successful for all this time surviving there without really getting knocked around too badly by the indigenous population.
Yes.
So, whereas the leadership in Israel is all Ashkenazi.
Yes.
And they, you know, they tend to not be sensitive about people's pride.
Yes.
And sort of, you know, rub their nose in the ground.
Yes.
You know, which gets emotional people even angrier.
Yes.
And I was just wondering, you know, like, do you think Israel would be better having someone with that background being the head rather than...
Sure. You know, Barak had at his cabinet five Iraqi Jews from...
Right.
Five.
Right.
It is a very big part of his government.
Right.
So maybe because of that, he was very, very near achieving a peace with the Palestinians.
Right.
But the tragedy, the will of the country is in the hands of the Ashkenazis, who know nothing, totally nothing about the area.
Right.
The only answer they have is to use force.
Right.
While things developed in the Middle East not by force, but by talk, not to and compromise.
Right.
And respecting each other tradition.
Right, right.
And that is the problem of the Zionism, problem of the Israelis, the problem of our existence there, in that area.
Mm-hmm. Right. Okay, so do you see, are they any more open now to have people of Middle Eastern background running the government, or it's a question of political power and they like to keep their own?
Meanwhile, no, I don't see any.
No.
Any,
in other words, they'll never have a Middle Eastern
or, a route change.
Right, they always want to run the country themselves.
Yeah.
Okay. That was it, and I appreciate it very much, and Shabbat Shalom.
Shabbat Shalom.
Thank you, Sammy.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.